Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Rolling.
Freedom Fiends.
You got it. Freedom Fiends. This
is the Freedom Dean here. How you doing, Nima Vedati?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I just ate dinner. It was a beautiful day. I can't complain.
I'm just as happy, but, you know, me, I can complain anyway.
I'm sure we'll get to the complaining at some point in the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So, did an interview with our friend Kofi from Africa Youth Peace Call that I'm going to put at the end of this podcast. It's a 15-minute interview with him, and it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is awesome, and you guys should definitely listen to the whole podcast. Just or fast forward, do whatever you want, but definitely make sure you listen to Michael's interview with Kofi. It's quality stuff.
Yeah, it's not quality audio, though, because I don't really have a way to record Skype directly on my computer, so I just did Skype phone with him and put the H2 in front of the speaker. But it sounds okay, and he's got a thick African accent, but if you listen to it carefully, you'll hear everything he says. I can.
Nice, nice. Well, you know what you could do is, can't you run audio from one computer into the sound card of your music computer? That's how I record mine.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. You'll get to it next time, right? But you're going to be doing this regularly once a month podcast with Kofi.
Yeah, and it was a very spontaneous thing. It was like he and I were video Skyping in the middle of the night, in the middle of my night, which is his morning. And all of a sudden I was like, hey, let me interview you. And like, you know, I did it as quickly as I could, as well as I could, without waking up the wife and moving a bunch of stuff around.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, explain to people a little bit more about who Kofi is. We didn't introduce, I know we talked about him last cast, but tell us what you're doing with this African Youth Peace Call, Michael.
What we're doing, because you and I are both now on their board of directors.
I feel like you've done a lot more.
Yeah. Well, I'm sending him a box of equipment. I'm sending him an old video camera and a bunch of cables and a couple Palm Pilots that a cool guy. Some people donated some equipment. Someone sent some Palm Pilots and someone sent a still camera, you know, digital camera.
Yeah.
Just for fun, I'm sending him that hunting hat I have with the LEDs on it.
Oh, nice. We use that in the movie.
Yeah. It's a prop from the movie.
Yeah,
you wear it while you're yelling about the government. But
and wearing an AK at the same time. Yeah. Hopefully Kofi will be doing it there in Ghana.
He cannot.
Pay the big exorbitant fee to the government.
But he does have a farm. He has a 1-acre farm. He has a little apartment in town and then a farm outside of town. And he goes
nice.
There.
Nice.
Yeah,
I envy him for that.
He said, I can wear the hat while I was wearing it while video Skyping him, and he loved it. And he said, I said I was sending it to him. And he said, yeah, I can wear it while I patrol my farm at night.
Nice. So he's got an acre, he's got a farm, and you think with all that, you need a gun, you need a Ruger Mini 14 or something.
He can't have one. He can have a bow and arrow, though. We talked about it.
Okay.
So he might be getting one of those. I don't know.
Can it be like a nice compound bow and arrow? Does it have to be like an old African longbow?
I don't know what the laws are. He says that like a compound bow is almost impossible to get and very expensive there. But, you know, hell, if I had a farm and I lived somewhere you couldn't have a gun, I'd make a slingshot, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a slingshot
carry
with
rocks
ball
in your pockets or something.
Yeah, a slingshot with ball bearing can make someone leave you alone or kill an animal for food.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So does the government harass him on his farm?
Okay. No, I mean, it's a weird mixture of, like, free market and overregulation, but the whole country. But that's his mission, is basically teaching young people about free market economics in a country that, you know, is a combination of, like, totally ignored and totally socialist, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't looked at the CIA fact sheet for Ghana, but I imagine, like a lot of other developing world countries, there's more young people. There's probably a lot more people under 20 than there is old people.
Well, it is the fastest economically developing country in the world, but that's because they've got so far to go. I mean, the average income is $1,200 US a year.
Yeah, yeah.
He wrote a great article about telecom that I'll link. Telecom in his country as a analogy for what everything else needs to do. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I talked about on another cast about how when I was a kid, my sister was an exchange student in the country of South Africa, mm-hmm. and we called her once, and it was $10 a minute to call her. Kofi's not that old. He's 30, but, you know, he wrote this article about how, you know, in 1997 even, having a telephone cost $1,000 U.S. deposit there.
And now everybody has phones and texts each other.
Because
and,
it's deregulated.
Right.
I mean,
right.
He remembers going with his mother having to drive 250 kilometers to use a payphone.
Yeah, yeah. But companies there are free to, at will, sell their goods.
And freer than they were. And, you know, an interim job that sprang up for entrepreneurs was there were people who got those early cell phones and then stood on the median of the highway and charged people to pull over and make a phone call.
Nice. So they were human payphones, basically.
Yeah. You know, economies will evolve when they need to.
Right, right. And industrious people will always find something that people need and find a way to give it to them.
Yep. So we had a new record for downloads. We had 7.92 gigabytes in less than one day.
In less than one day. Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it's like 8 gigs in a day, basically. Nice.
So we appreciate it, y'all. Thanks for everybody who listens to the Freedom yep. Fiends.
Part of it might have been because there were a couple people that downloaded all the casts because they discovered it and loved it. We have a new fan in Prague, Czech Republic, named Vaclav. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. He's trying to get our movie shown in Prague, and he's willing to do the translations for the subtitles.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. And he and I have been chatting back and forth. So
his name is Vaclav?
Vaclav.
That is a great name.
I know.
We appreciate it, Vaclav. I think it's
the first name of the president there too, or the last president there.
I actually did get a chance to read the email he sent us. You forwarded that on to me, and he does make some interesting points on that.
So part of doing translation for subtitles is I'm having to transcribe the whole movie in English, and that's what I've been doing this week.
Ooh. Well, I figured you would know it by memory by now, as many times as you've watched
almost,
it.
Almost. And actually, about 40% of the movie is scripted, and I still have the scripts.
Is it a whole 40%?
I haven't measured it, but it's, you know, between 20 and 40% of it is scripted. Because everything that DJ did as voiceover, everything that Jay Tizzle did, you know, the blonde, beautiful girl staring into the camera did, everything that you did as an anchor, and, right, you know, a few other people that look like they're on-the-spot interviews really aren't. And we took a couple of the professor, Shane, the guy who's in front of the Don't Tread on Me flag. This is kind of funny. I tried to film him. You were out of town. I tried to film him like a terrorist video. Like, you know, guy with a mic in frame in front of the flag.
The only catch is terrorists don't have HD cams yet.
I know.
So it looked way better than than an Al-Qaeda.
I know. But some of what he said was so great, but there was so much of him in the movie that what we actually did was transcribed two or three of his parts and then gave him to DJ as voiceover.
Right, which worked out really well.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of typing. I mean, I've done like 18 hours of transcription in the past week on it, and it's all done except for one chapter, the last proper chapter, the chapter that ends with the flag walk. That's a long chapter, so I'm saving that for a day or two.
Yeah, yeah. I really wonder how Vaclav's going to translate the raps. They won't rhyme anymore.
I don't know if he is going to or not. Okay. I don't know if they need to or not. He and I haven't discussed that yet. There's a couple different people that may show it. I've asked my friend Marika, who is an American expat that I know from San Francisco, who flew me out there to show the Selby movie. I'm not going to fly out there. I'm just asking her to show it and maybe do a Skype video Q&A after. If she can't do it, there's this other libertarian businessman, Christopher Shallow.
Shallow. Okay.
Yeah, who works at a university there, and I've talked to him about it too.
Wow. So it will be international. And are we going to get it shown in Ghana too, or are they going to show that as part of the conference? Or?
Yeah, they're going to show it in Ghana. Kofi's still downloading it. Like, he couldn't do it on BitTorrent. It kept crapping out. It's too big a file. So I made a thing that's like 16 separate files. Each one's around 50 megs, 100 megs. Okay. And then set him up a blind folder to download them. And he was downloading them one at a time.
Yikes.
The internet's slow there. I mean, you know, they have DSL. He has to go to a web cafe for DSL
okay.
and pay like $1.50 an hour, which is a fortune there. We're also trying to get them some donations, and they are tax deductible. So if you go to the website for it, you can make them through their American 501c3.
They have their own American 501c3?
No, it's through an umbrella group. It's an American 501c3.
For those who don't know what 501c3 is, a nonprofit, so the government won't tax you.
Yeah, it's nonprofit status. So the website for them is, which I'll link, is AYPCGHANA.org, and I've done a complete revamp on their website for them. So their American 501c3 is the International Society for Individual Liberty in San Francisco, who I've talked to on the phone, and they've actually had a member go there in person and work with this organization. So we know they're legit because they've sent someone there. It's not a P.O. box. It's not a scam.
How pimp is that, that our movie will have been seen on three continents?
I know.
Well, at least, I guess, screened in three continents. Yeah, I'm sure people...
It's been downloaded on every continent except Antarctica.
Right.
And maybe, who knows?
Those penguins need to get with the times, man.
Well, you know, there might be some bored researcher in a Navy laboratory there or something. UN Navy laboratory. So, word. I wanted to talk about the word.
The word, as in word to your mother?
Yeah. Oh, I'm also going to put a video link YouTube of my friend Marika in Prague's band, Superpilot, who kick ass. I'll put that on the website.
That's also a kick-ass name, Superpilot, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I dig it.
Have you seen that video, Oh Yes, Wyoming?
Yeah, is that the Jerry Seinfeld produced one?
Yeah.
Which
is, you know, for a guy that I don't think is that funny, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I'll put that on there too.
Seinfeld's funny at times. He has his moments.
Yeah.
The show had its definitely had its moments. I thought it was quality.
I used to watch it.
Yeah, yeah. I used to have a big crush on Elaine.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I'd hit it.
So, angry crows dive bomb officers in Everett, Washington. Did we talk about that?
I think we were going to. I clicked on the link and it took me nowhere. What's going on? Crows were hating on the pigs, huh?
Yeah.
Is that a metaphor? Or
I don't know, man.
Birds were actually attacking cops.
I don't know. And the FBI seized the Digital One servers in a raid in Virginia. They were after one client who was hacking the FBI site, but they went into this internet service provider and stole the whole rack. So everybody's website that was hosted on that one rack, hundreds of people went black.
Right. I mean, that's like the equivalent of, you know, bombing a whole city to get one guy. It's like the FBI is now taking a cue from the U.S. military, at least when it comes to servers. Very... jackbooted tactics more and more these days. Now for hackers, they're going to bust into places and take whole servers.
Yeah.
I mean, next they're going to be condemning the whole building.
You know, someone asked me what's the best, there was a poll on Facebook of what's the best social network for liberty if Facebook went down, and they had like MySpace and then a couple others I haven't heard of. And I put other and put ham radio.
Ham radio.
You know, because if they could just take the internet.
If they took the internet. I guess if they just took Facebook. There's actually a liberty-friendly Facebook-type site recently called RTR. You can go to rtr.org. It's basically a liberty-friendly networking thing. You know, if you post all your Ron Paul stuff or all your libertarian stuff or even all your conspiracy stuff, it's...
I've seen them. It looks interesting. I don't know. I got an invite to join them. I too much on the internet and not enough free time.
That's how I feel too. I mean, I don't even do my Facebook that often. I mean,
I'm the only person that ever posts updates on your wall.
Other people post every now and then, but I mean, it's not like I'm not a Facebook fiend. I'm a freedom fiend.
Yeah.
I joined this group and maybe one day I use it. I'd probably use it if Facebook crashed, but social networking, unless you're really into it, sometimes for me at least, it's just a thing to check up on people every now and then.
Well, you know what I say? The great thing about the internet is that anybody can find you. And the horrible thing about the internet is that anybody can find you.
Yeah.
Oh, the CIA website was hacked and defaced. That's about a month old news. And it happened to some crime department of the police in England, too. Hacking.
People have been hacking. You know, in fact, I was able to do a story on my mainstream news about one of these things. We have what we call PNNL, which is Pacific Northwest National Laboratory up here. And they do a lot of homeland security work. You know, they're building this next generation of radiotrons to scan people at borders and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They get all this government cash, you know, and they have all these secret projects. They're right next to the Hanford site, which is part of where the Manhattan Project was when they developed, you know, the nuclear bombs. Or I guess back then it was the atomic bomb. And they were hacked a couple weeks ago. They called it persistent, well-funded hackers, basically, tried to get in and steal all their secrets. And they were shut down for like 2 weeks, didn't have any internet. In the piece, it was like they're going back to faxes now, you know, at one of the most high-tech labs in the country. So, yeah, and apparently a couple other big national labs like that got hit. I guess hacking is hackers are stepping it up.
Hacking is the new Pac-Man. When I was a kid, it was Pac-Man.
you think that's what it is? You think it's kids effing around or what?
Some of it.
I think some of it is. I think some of it is, I mean, I hate to use the term cyber warfare, but if it's there.
Yeah. Well, that group Anonymous has been taking down PayPal and Citibank. I think it was Citibank. Basically, people that deleted internet pay sites for WikiLeaks. That's cyber warfare. It's fighting back.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Oh, we got a $50 donation from some great people, Aaron and Trinity. Want to shout out to them and thank them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Money.
I PayPal'd you half of that. Did you get it?
I haven't checked my PayPal. It's like PayPal, my Facebook. Man. Yeah, I should when money's coming.
I would check PayPal over Facebook.
Well, pays. You know, they sent me an email, so I assumed that in the email it was them saying, you've got cash.
Hey, so there's three things I really want to talk about. One is free versus free, which leads into talking about intellectual property, especially with us. And then I want to talk. Let's talk first about the word "word." You know, my worms are bond.
You mean like word is bond, son?
Word is bond. Yeah. So, do you want to read this hip hop slang definition?
Word is the shortened form of the phrase "my word is my bond," which was originated by inmates in U.S. prisons. The longer phrase was shortened to "word is bond" or "word is bond" before becoming "word," which is most commonly used. It basically means truth or to speak the truth.
My worms are bond.
Your worms are bond. I don't know if I go that far with worms.
So next is "word to your mother."
"Word to your mother" is an anachronistic corruption of the phrase "word to the mother," which was a popular reference to Africa or the motherland during the late 1980s Afrocentric movement. While the replacement of "the" with "your" effectively obliterated the term's Afrocentric roots, maybe, it continued to be used in the same manner, that is, to express agreement. Alternatively, the "your" could take on sinister connotations, implying that the speaker was sexually intimate with the listener's mother, as in, "say hi to your mom for me," or in keeping with the terminology, "props to your mom, she's the bomb." Did you write this?
No.
Finally, the phrase might mean nothing at all and might just be used ineptly feigned street cred in the style of Vanilla Ice. You say "word to your mother" in Ice Ice Baby?
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
You know, I always thought it meant "word to your mother." I always thought it meant "you're a good guy." Like, tell your mother she did a good job with you.
I never thought of it like that, but I like that definition too. What was this from? Urban Dictionary?
Yeah.
Okay. I dig it. Nice and open source for you.
So next we're going to talk about free versus free.
That's a very important distinction, free
it's
versus
gratis
free.
It's gratis versus libre. Negative test results are positive. That's how I remember that negative rights are good, because negative test results are positive.
Like if you got a negative test result in your HIV test?
Yeah, it's a positive thing. But, you know, gratis versus libre is basically like free guns versus free health care. You know, if I have a show and there's free beer, that's gratis. But libre is liberated. But people confuse them. Like, free health care isn't free.
No. And it's not a freedom either.
Yeah, it's not a freedom. And the liars and the stealers and the nanny staters confuse that.
Right. But then again, I think it's important to stress that there's no such thing as a free lunch concept.
You know what? You're saying there's no such thing as a free lunch, and in the other room, DJ's yelling, "Tonstoffel," which is the acronym for "there's no such thing as a free lunch." Well, got it, honey. We got it covered. Thank you. Love you.
That's the really important thing, though.
She's in there reading Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Oh, so. Is she? Oh. I read that book for the first time, like, exactly this time last year when I was in
Yellowstone. We lent it to you,
didn't
we?
You did. Yeah, it was that exact copy that DJ's reading right now.
Yep.
But the important concept there is that's true. There's when you talk about something free, somebody's paying for it. That's why free healthcare is not really a freedom, and it's not even really free. Somebody else has to pay for it, and you don't have a right to make somebody, to force somebody else to pay for your big pharma pills or anything like that.
And, you know, the people that want to take a tax on stealing from other people and moving the money around make up lies that you have a right to this. The UN is really big on that, too. The UN is supposed to be this big peace and love and freedom organization, but they're all about taking money from one pot by force and moving it to another. They also disarmed a lot of countries in Africa. They disarmed people in Darfur as part of their guns are bad, we need to take them away. And they took them away from people, which made them sitting ducks for the Jadaween, you know?
Well, governments love the concept of gratis or that kind of free, like free healthcare or free money, which is basically what welfare is, which again isn't free because they have to take it from somebody. They play the shell game and don't show you that they took the money in the first place. So you think they're just getting free stuff. They want people to think of that as the free term when people think of free. They don't want people to think of libre, which is freedom from things, as you said, negative rights kind of thing, freedom from government intrusion, freedom from oppression.
To our negative rights, which are good things. The Bill of Rights, the U.S. Bill of Rights, is all negative rights. The Constitution itself has some positive rights in it, which I don't like. But we here at Freedom Fiends are bigger fans of the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights than of the Constitution proper.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, a big debate with free versus free is intellectual property. And there's a lot of different takes on this, you know, like for instance, copyright, trademark, patent, you know, file sharing issues. First of all, a lot of people, let me explain really quickly the difference between trademark, patent, and copyright. Okay. Not many people know the difference. You know, people say, well, I came up with this great idea, this great song, and I want to patent it. No, you copyright a song, you patent an idea or process or invention. Or there are design patents, too, which is kind of like a copyright, but it's the like the shape of the Coca-Cola bottle is covered by a design patent. And then there's trademarks. Now, in a libertarian paradise, I believe that trademark would be the one that would be most important, not patent or copyright. What do you think?
Why trademark?
Because trademark is your name and you, and my word is bond. Because in a libertarian paradise, things wouldn't be enforced by government guns protecting copyrights. It would just be you'd come up with something that's great, and other people would want to get it from you because they like the quality and your service more than the other guy. So you'd want to be able to put your name as a trademark on that.
Right.
And that's what you'd be protecting is basically your name of your way of doing things.
Well, I don't know if it'd even work in the way that trademarks work today. I think more what it would be is it would be fraud if somebody else said they were selling your product and it was from you.
Actually, with internet encryption and security keys, you could protect that without needing a trademark.
Right,
you know?
Right. There'd be other ways around it. You still wouldn't need the government guns, and you wouldn't even have your private agency go out and bust somebody's head for using your thing, but it would be fraud, and people would find out it was fraud, and there'd be ways you can do it, like you say, with technology, to leave a real trademark.
If you bought the Rolex watch or the CD by the band you like and you wanted to know that it really came from that company, you'd take a picture of it with your cell phone, and it would radio uplink, and it would confirm through the security key in it that can't be copied that, yeah, that's from that company. And that brings in another thing, too, like things like RFID readers and a lot of the ways that governments and corporations spy on people in a negative way right now. I think in libertarian paradise, a lot of that could be free. You know, it could be liberated, libre, in that computers could be used for good and it'd be harder to use them for evil. It'd be harder to spy on people. It'd be immoral. It'd be no one would do business with you if you did that kind of thing. A company like Google in a libertarian paradise probably wouldn't save all of the searches, or at least not connect them with IP addresses that could be taken by law enforcement.
Right, right. Which probably a big reason a company like Google would do something like that is to cooperate with police, and they probably couch it in terms of public safety or...
Well, their motto is do no evil. That's the corporate motto of Google, but, you know, they do evil when there's a gun to their head saying, help us do evil.
Yeah, yeah. And the unfortunate thing is a lot of people don't necessarily see the evil that is government. When people think of police and FBI and the government guns, people don't automatically think evil, and I think that's unfortunate. I think that's one of the things we try to change here at Freedom Fiends, is show everybody that all these laws are all forced by a gun to your head, and that's inherently evil.
And that's something that just so many people don't realize. And it's like, even, let's just say, like unicorn fart powered people who think that no citizen should be able to own guns. We say in the movie, you know, those people are pro-gun because they want the government to use guns to take guns away from citizens.
I never understood why some people hate cops and hate guns, but demand the government enforce peaceful, utopian agendas when the government enforces those agendas with cops who have guns.
Citizens aren't all going to disarm. If they outlawed guns tomorrow and made it to where it's a 10-year prison sentence to own a gun, and they would probably have a, when that happens someday, they'll probably have an amnesty period where you can, you have a month to bring your guns in, and they give you a, you know, coupon for food because you're starving. You know, I'd say of the 80 to 100 million gun owners in this country, I think probably a third or half of them would turn them in. And two-thirds or a half would not. And some people would shoot when the cops come to take their guns. Other people would give them up. But you're not going to get rid of the guns.
No, no, that's impossible. And that's the point, is that is completely unicorn fart powered to think that there could ever be a world without them now. I mean, even if you did somehow destroy every gun in the world, people would figure it out again eventually. It wouldn't even take them that long. The very next day, there'd be another gun manufactured if you destroyed all the guns right now. I think even if you destroyed all the gun manufacturing plants right now, you'd have a gun in a week.
Yeah, there was, I forget what country it is. It's some country where guns are completely illegal, like Japan or Vietnam, and within the past year, there was somebody who went on a shooting spree, and it was with a homemade gun and homemade powder and homemade bullets.
Yeah, I mean, the technology's there. There's no IP or patent that's ever going to prevent it from staying around and existing. It's impossible. I mean, you don't even need a gun to shoot a bullet. I mean, you can make a zip gun.
Well, that's a gun.
That's a gun.
It's, you know,
that's
a gun. Basically, a gun is a tube with a firing pin.
Right, basically. You could theoretically just have a... You know,
so getting back to intellectual property before we break some laws here, talk about intellectual property in a non-libertarian and a libertarian sense. For one thing, there's this argument of the goat. Have you heard the goat argument?
No.
Or the chicken argument? There's a lot of people who say that file sharing, you know, like say if you get the latest movie and put it on the internet and other people download it on BitTorrent or whatever technology they use, you know, there's people, a lot of people say it's not stealing, because stealing is like if you have two chickens and I steal one, then you only have one chicken. You have less than you had. But if you make a movie and I make a digital copy of it, you still have as many copies of the movie as you started with.
Yeah, yeah, I buy that completely. I think that's the true anarchist position, is that copying is completely different from stealing. And if you make that kind of action illegal, then what you're doing is you're restricting the person's property who owns it. If I buy a DVD, I bought that DVD, I own it, I can do whatever I want with it. That's part of ownership. It's become my private property. If I want to show it to all my friends in my living room, that's my right. If I want to upload it to Pirate Bay or something like that, then that's equally my right.
What irks me is not when people take my media and put it on BitTorrent, and most of my media is on BitTorrent, most of the books, movies, records, everything I've ever done, including Guns and Weed. And there's a few different copies of Guns and Weed floating around, and there's an ISO, which is a perfect DVD copy. You can burn a perfect DVD from it. But that's like 4.2 gigs. It takes a while to download.
And you have to have a little bit more computer literacy than tech some
savvy
people do.
Yeah. There's another one that's like iPod size, 640 by 480, 16 separate chapters, and it looks pretty good, and it's like 800 megs, which I'm happy with. Then there's somebody who took that and sewed it all together and re-rendered it into one file, and it looks like ass, and it's still about 700 megs. I'm upset that someone did that. I don't feel I should have like legal recourse or anything about it, but I think out of respect to the artist,
yeah,
you shouldn't put things up that look or sound like when you can make a perfect digital copy if you know what you're doing. You know, get someone else to do it.
Yeah, but I think things like comments sort that out. I mean, I haven't looked at this guy's torrent, but I know every torrent I look at, I read the comments before I hit download. And some people are like, this is crap, or, oh, there's one way better here, search this.
Which is another way that, like, in a libertarian paradise, and we've talked about that before, you know, in a libertarian paradise, there'd be, like Shane said, there'd be a lot more things like Consumer Reports, but there'd also be a lot more things like, what are the websites where people do comments? Well, all of them, you know, Amazon, yeah, eBay.
And forums and things like Angie's List. And there's a million ways, especially when everything's open source. And I think comments and things like open source, that's some of the best info out there. Not single comments. I'm not saying that people that comment are geniuses, because Lord knows there's lots of retarded stuff. But through reading 100 different people's take on something, I think you get a lot better truth than reading even just the author's take on it.
Yeah.
Or all in unison, I think you get a better picture than back in the old model of doing things, which is, you know, reading something in a newspaper or reading five letters to the editor.
One problem that I have with it, and this is again not something I feel that a government gun should take care of, but all of those sites that do file sharing, they're making money off our movie and we're not, because there's ads on all those pages. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like bitter, like, but, you know, if you download it, go donate $2 or $5 to us on PayPal from the website, from gunsandweed.com, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a good model. And you told me that when we first met, you know, you give away a lot of your media and you sell it at the same time. You do it with both, you know, your album, you give it away, yeah. You sell it. And people who really like the product, you want to get them to pay you because they're supporting you as an artist. And, you know, Radiohead did that with their album. They just put it up there, said, download it, pay us if you like us or don't, whatever.
You know, an interesting thing about that model, about the Radiohead model, is I don't think they could have done that successfully if they weren't first on a major label at this point. I think that that's going to change with time.
Right, right.
But I think if they'd never been on a major label and did that, they'd get 500 downloads and 10 donations. But since they'd been on a major label and had that boost, they were able to, I don't know, they gave away several million copies of it and got hundreds of thousands of donations.
I think Radiohead did do it first, but there's another example here. I'm not sure on the chronology of it. There's a dude named Girl Talk, and his whole bit is he does this DJing, you know, with his laptop. I think it's a MacBook. I'm not sure if he uses Serato or what program he uses, but he does these awesome mashups of like 80s schlock rock with the dirtiest, nastiest hip-hop verses, and they're all at pumping drums, just stuff that, you know, frat boys and sorority sisters just want to bump uglies to. Genius stuff. Dude's name is Girl Talk, and because all of his stuff is, you know, other people's music mixed together, it's all just one big sample fest, he can't sell it legally. He'd have the record companies burning him alive. So what he did was he just posted it online. People love his stuff, and he said, you know, I recommend you donate $5. But if you want to download it for free, download it for free. He can't get in trouble for using all these samples because he's not selling it.
I don't know that that's true. I wouldn't be surprised if he still got cease and desist letters. Did he?
He didn't. And he's been doing it for years, and he plays live shows because, you know, he's a DJ. That's what DJs do.
Well, because the thing is, a lot of major corporations will send out lawyer letters even when they don't have a basis to.
They want to scare you off, but...
Yeah, and the thing of the idea of fair use is very amorphous, right. And there, it's not set in stone. I mean, there used to be a rumor that you could sample up to 8 notes of a song. That's not true. It's basically, it's up to a jury. And sometimes it goes to one. They usually scare you off and cease and desist or make you pay. But I'm surprised he hasn't gotten some. But then again, I think that more major corporations are open to the idea now that this kind of stuff promotes their product rather than taking food off their table.
Oh, completely. I mean, there's so many songs that I would have never listened to if I hadn't first heard the sample in a hip-hop song. If I hadn't been like, that is the best riff ever, I want to know where that song comes from, and then I go listen to it. And then maybe I want to sample it, and then maybe somebody else wants to sample it. And it gets out there, the song gets a completely new life. And that's one of the things I'd like to say about IP, is IP, things like this, it stifles art. Art is better when it's copied and reproduced. The ideas, they need to go through many different people before they reach their true beauty, I think.
And if you're a touring artist, you're going to have more people at your show, not less, buying tickets and t-shirts if you have your stuff on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If people are copying it. So another aspect of this IP thing, as it relates directly to us, is, and this is kind of funny, and this is, again, nothing that should be enforced with the government gun, but it's something I can make fun of and say that is so square, is a lot of people, especially, I think, teenagers, based on their spelling, damn kids, feel like they own this stuff that someone else made in a really weird way. Like, we had the whole movie up on YouTube for 5 months, and then we started showing it at festivals and decided to take down all but the first four and the last chapter. And the day I did that, it started getting hater comments on YouTube, like, why the couldn't I watch most of this video? That's bullshit. Why the fuck are these privated while others aren't? How the hell am I able to see other parts to this? Like, I took away his toy, you know?
But, you know, I almost appreciate, I wish he would have worded it better, but I appreciate the sentiment. He really wants to watch the movie.
And then again, you know, if he's smart, he'll go find the other ways to watch it.
If he's smart, he'll find the other ways to watch it. That's the other thing. Yeah, I think it's the attitude that we have a problem with, but not necessarily the him wanting to watch it. If I were him and I were in his position and I wanted to watch that, I would first go to check and see if I could find it elsewhere online. And then I would go to the website and get in touch with us. I mean, see if what we can do to help him.
Yeah, I mean, it is on BitTorrent, and I was actually seeding it for a while. I won't say I put it up. I'd never bootleg my own movie. But someone put the DVD ISO on, and I was really happy to see it getting downloaded all over the world. And it had like 85 theaters for the first couple of weeks. It's got like 20 now. That's what like a major Hollywood movie has almost when it goes on Pirate Bay. Yeah. I was just kind of fantasizing that it's already being sold on blankets for 50 cents on the streets of Hong Kong, Moscow, Stockholm, Melbourne, Helsinki, London, Manila, and Bangalore, and all over America.
Afghanistan. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully that little dude in the Hurt Locker will sell it to some American soldier.
Well, one thing that we can do is once I do the English translations, this guy in Prague can make there's a sort of a subtitle file format, and if we upload that, then other people can take that and translate it to other languages and then share it. It's sharing, people doing the work for free to help give away something for free to everybody.
Beautiful. Exactly. Another beauty of open sourceness in the modern age of technology. I mean,
yes. Greece prepares to sell off state assets to get loans.
They're not even going to get real money for them.
Right. Greece is a perfect example of what to do wrong if you're running a country.
Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, the Greek model is the model that every Western nation follows.
Well, they invented democracy, too.
Oh, there you go. And obviously, Greece is in much worse shape now. You know, they're the California of the EU, pretty much. But the thing is, the ideas, the root of the problem is the same root of the problem that we have. I mean, what's going on right now? We're trying to raise our debt ceiling. Our debt's at the point where you can never pay it back. We're in the same position, basically. It's just we have the biggest guns and the most guns in the world. So people, I mean, we're not in the same position as Greece is, but we're in the same boat. We're the healthiest patient in the cancer ward.
Well, that's what Boston said 15 years ago. I'm not even sure that's true anymore. I don't know what country would be the healthiest patient. Probably somewhere in like Norway or Sweden, which I hate to say it. They're socialist. I don't know.
I don't know about Sweden. Maybe Switzerland.
People might be living better there than here. Well, Switzerland recently voted to keep their gun rights, which is kind of weird. And it didn't pass by a lot. I think it was 60 or 70% for and, 30 or 40% against, which is kind of scary. But it's like they put it to a vote to the whole country of like, should we allow people to have guns or not? And it's like, Switzerland is the one country that the Nazis didn't go kill the Jews. It's because everybody still had their guns.
Right, right. From what I understand, they do have compulsory military service, which obviously we can't co-sign. But from what I understand, they keep their guns in their home proudly displayed like a piece of furniture. Every home has one.
Well, I don't know if it's proudly. It's more like in the closet, a full auto rifle. And then a big box of ammo, and the ammo is sealed. Like, they're not allowed to open it up and shoot it and play with it. But every military-eligible adult male from, 18 to 30 or whatever in Switzerland has a machine gun and a box of ammo in his closet.
Right, right. I got the bolt action and the spammo can next to my bed. Need to upgrade to the battle rifle, Michael.
I do.
You already got one, don't you?
I got an AK, which is a mini battle rifle.
I think that counts in our situation. I know Boston would call foul on that.
He'd call foul on that.
No pun intended.
Well, also, I'm picturing that in a shit hits the fan situation, I would dig in my house, not go out in the woods. And the longest line of sight from my house until there's a building is like 100 yards.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
In any direction.
I think if you have a Mosin and an AK, you're okay.
I feel okay.
Yeah.
So I went to the Free State Wyoming Hootenanny a while back. I never talked about that.
Yes.
I took Boston's rifle class the first day of it. It was really good. And it was, there were like 75 people and, probably 10 or 15 kids on top of that, 75 adults. And then there was a lightning strike. We missed it. We'd left 100 yards from the camp. Lightning hit. Everyone said it was like the hand of God coming down and going bzzz and loud as hell. I had an interesting talk there with Don Willis, the guy that used to be the Republican Liberty Caucus Wyoming leader.
And then
leader.
It was you, and now it's somebody else?
It's been me, it's been Shane Sheed, and it's Shepard Humphreys.
Everybody's an anarchist now, except for Don Willis.
Don's involved in politics. He's starting his own party called the County Party. But I had an interesting talk with him about politics. We were talking about the bill passing in Wyoming to where you can conceal carry without
constitutional carry. You don't need to get the government's permission.
Yeah, constitutional carry. And it's interesting because like some things pass that probably wouldn't pass to a public vote. Like an example right now, in Montana, everybody voted to have medical marijuana, and it passed by like 65% or something. And now the Republican legislature there is trying to take that away. Like they know better from everybody. Mm-hmm. you know, I was thinking, like, if you put constitutional carry to a vote in Wyoming, I don't think it would pass. That's what I said to him. And I think it passed because a lot of politicians were riled up by our lobbyist friend.
You really don't think it would pass?
Well, I said that, and then here's what he said. He said, a majority of Wyoming is probably not in favor of that, but it would have passed, and here's why. And he explained how 3% of people plus one person decide all elections. And he had this formula for it. I don't quite remember it all, but it was something like certain percentage of the people aren't old enough to vote. Certain percentage of the people are non-voting felons, can't vote. Certain percentage of the people don't vote. And then it gets down to like 20% of the people in a given place actually go to the polls. Yeah. And there's like a certain percentage of them who will always vote Republican no matter what, and a certain percentage will always vote Democrat no matter what. And then it's really decided by 3% of the people plus one person.
Yeah, yeah. Although, I mean, if it were a referendum, I don't know if the formula still holds. I mean, that might work
for governor. Well, because there's not a Republican and Democrat component, but there kind of is, too.
Yeah, I mean there's the mainstream Republican line, which would always be...
But it's, you know, basically every gun owner that was in favor of that would have gone to vote even if they haven't voted in years. Yeah. You know, they would have registered so they could vote for that.
I agree. I think that, I mean, I don't know if I agree with Willis's formula. I haven't seen it. But I do think that Wyoming would have voted for it. If it were a referendum, I think it would have passed in Wyoming.
Speaking of Montana, did you see that thing about reformed Nazi twin singers renounce racism and credit marijuana?
Yeah, I clicked on the link. These girls look like the Olsen twins with a Hitler smiley face on their shirts.
Well, they're someone that I've been intrigued with in a kind of disgusted way for a long time. They're this group called Prussian Blue. It's a singing duo, and they were making records since they were like 12, and I think they're like 19 now. You know, they were homeschooled by a crazy Nazi mother who basically like helped them write their lyrics and made them. You know, she was like a pushy stage mother and turned them into these like Nazi pinup girls. Yeah, they're really cute. They're really good singers. And they sing about, you know, the fatherland and Hitler and the white race. And one of them got a tumor and the other had some other health problem. And they both went on medical marijuana. They were the first miners in Montana to get medical marijuana cards. And they said that marijuana like relaxed them enough to re-examine their beliefs. And now they're no longer white supremacists.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's marijuana itself. I think that's just a lot of times when you do something that the status quo tells you your whole life is evil, and then you realize it's not evil, it makes you go back and re-question the status quo because it lied to you about that one thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I really think the fact that drugs, and especially marijuana, are so illegal is in the long run going to be part of the downfall of statism.
Oh, I totally think it
because
is.
Because everybody, even if you don't smoke pot, everybody knows someone who smokes pot. Or, you know, I had a family member that was arrested for pot 30 years ago, and it was really heinous.
Well, how many people do you think really buy the government line on pot? I mean, I got to say, it's got to be less than 20%. Wouldn't you think so?
My dad does, but he's 90.
Exactly. You got to be over 50, I think, to buy the government line on marijuana.
He still can't buy the logic of, you know, he lived through prohibition of alcohol and knows it didn't work. And I explained that to him, that it's exactly the same thing. And he's like, well, I can see it in theory, but I just still think that drugs are bad because they cause all this violence. And I'm like, no, the laws cause the violence. Right. And he's like, well, so you say, you know.
Well, I think there's a little bit of societal momentum. And maybe it, again, goes back to the horizontal enforcement that we talk about sometimes. But I think a lot of times when the way things have been that way for old people their whole life, it's hard for them to reexamine it. I guess another way to say it is you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think you see this throughout history. When there's a major paradigm shift in thinking and people – the youth realize things, they're always ahead of the game. They're always the better barometer than the older people. The old people cling to their ways, and a lot of times major changes don't happen until that older generation that usually tends to run things dies off. So I don't think statism dies until
everyone's in jail.
Until everyone's in jail or the baby boomers are past the time when they're running things.
Yeah. People need to look for a new Chautauqua. You know, we didn't mention that in the Chautauqua article, that the term Chautauqua is known to a lot of hippies because of the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's used there not as a place, but as a state of mind to seek to attain. And jazz wanker Pat Metheny also had an album called New Chautauqua using it the same way.
What's a jazz wanker?
A jazz musician who noodles a lot.
Oh, okay, okay.
A guitar player who plays too many notes for the royal ear.
For the royal ear, what do you mean by that?
That's a reference to the movie Amadeus, where Mozart wrote this really complicated, like, groundbreaking piece and brought it to the king who was paying him. And the king listened to it and said, "Too many notes for the royal ear." All right, on that note, I think we're going to segue into this great interview with Kofi from Africa Youth Peace Corps that I did the other day. I'm not going to put all of those on here, just this first one, but you can also go to the site and subscribe. I'll put a link on our
site.
Definitely
check it out. Very interesting stuff. Good work, Michael.
Worms. Worms to your mother, and my worms is bond.
Peace. African Peace. Youth Call.
Yeah. So we're doing an interview today with Kofi from African Youth Peace Call, the organization in Ghana, Africa that I've been involved with and helping out with their website and donations and proofreading and trying to get them some equipment, giving them some equipment. They're a really good organization, and Nima and I both really like them. So Kofi, tell me about yourself and about your organization.
I will be 34 on 30th December, and I'm a journalist by training, but I have to abandon my career in search of freedom and liberty for my continent, and I took up with this organization, African Youth Peace Call. I've been running it since 1997, but it was a socialist in outlook until in 2005. I met some guys in Nairobi, Kenya, another African country, at a conference where I realized that I have been following a very stupid philosophy. That is what is actually making my country and my continent poor. So it was then that I started studying the freedom philosophies, and I changed the mode and the work of my organization to that of a libertarian, and to start advocate for freedom.
That's good. I didn't mean to interrupt you. We're on Skype calling from, I'm in Wyoming and Kofi is in Ghana, Africa, in a web cafe. Do you have web access at your home?
Thanks to communication liberalization, you can have an equipment like a memory stick, and if you slot in it to your internet, you can have an access, but I can't share it with my other team. So with me alone, with that particular small memory stick, I slot it into my computer and I can have access to the net.
But you go to Web Cafe, even though it costs money, because the internet is faster and more reliable?
Yeah, especially when I want to use stuff like the video cam and then the earpiece and stuff. I go out there to use the internet cafes out there. Cafes are faster than those servers the communication companies provide. That the one I said, it comes in a memory stick.
Yes.
So sometimes when I have a huge work to do or maybe an interview to do online, I prefer using the internet cafe, although they are a little bit expensive.
Yes. You and I have a lot in common in our past. I used to be socialist also, and then had a religious experience of liberty, I would say. You know, it's almost like religion to me now. So we're both recovering socialists. You know, there's recovering alcoholics, and we're recovering socialists.
Yeah. I learned that recovering socialists are very good when it comes to teaching freedom.
Yes, because we know what to say to people. People, you know, it's the same thing with alcoholics. Like, a doctor cannot help an alcoholic as well as an ex-alcoholic, you know? Like, in AA, it's ex-alcoholics helping alcoholics kick alcohol, and we're ex-socialists, so we can help people. I think that the name of your organization is good, and you should always keep it, but I still think it sounds a little socialist. That was my first impression, but now it makes sense because it was the name when you were a socialist organization.
Yeah, people say about the name, I don't believe that, because we're free markets. Definitely there will be peace in Africa. So a lot of conflict here stems from economic discrimination. There's no economic freedom for all the people. It's only the few people with connections to government. And then insecure property rights has also kind of sparked a lot of conflicts in Africa. So with free markets, definitely we can get peace here. And our aim is for younger people in Africa to lead the way to find peace and prosperity for Africa. So we are calling on the youth of Africa to come help build an Africa that believes in free markets. That will lead to prosperity.
What kind of events does African Youth Peace Call do, and how do you do outreach, and what else does your organization do?
Most of our activities are basically with younger people. We run seminars, workshops, camps, like our annual Liberty and Entrepreneurship Camp. That is scheduled from 31st of July to 5th of August this year. Every year we run that program, and with enough funding coming, we would love to run it twice a year. We have our Freedom and Society seminars. That also goes to colleges and universities to run seminars for students on the freedom philosophies. Basically, what we do is we run up students in 40s, 50s, and then try to lead them to the wealth and poverty of nations, why some countries are rich and why some countries are poor. And then we have a program for postgraduate students on free market environmentalism. And that is about how free markets can save the environment. You know, we are having our forest dwindling and then our wildlife getting extincted because of central management. And the irony here is that the forest guide, who is supposed to protect the forest, send them down to serve. And the wildlife guide, that is supposed to guide these animals from poachers, have themselves become poachers. So the focus of this seminars is to kind of let these younger people know that there's an alternative to save the environment. And it's basically aimed towards postgraduate students who are doing renewable natural resources and stuff. So most of our works are geared towards younger people. And then we have press appearances. And then we also have publications that will help people develop new ideas, opinions, and mode of thinking. And we run research programs too, like what we do on government legislations that goes against livelihoods. There are a lot of laws out here that goes against people trying to make a decent living.
You do a lot of radio interviews too, right? What kind of radio shows do you go on there, and how often?
Most of them are FM radios here, and I have appearances every week, especially on economic freedom. And then some of the morning shows also invite us to comment on national issues from our free market perspectives. So we have a very good presence on radio. Almost every week we can get one appearance there. We have a program on communicating freedom. And what we do is we organize seminars for journalists on the Economic Freedom Index so that they will know that the problem here is that more priority has been given to political freedom, and then economic freedom has been ignored. But the fact is, if you don't have economic freedom, there's no way you'll be able to exercise your political freedom. For instance, if your rights has been infringed upon and you don't have money, how do you go to court? If you have to go and exercise your franchise and you don't have the money to travel to your hometown, how do you go to vote? But the sad reality is that economic freedom has been relegated to the background here. So the aim of Communicating Freedom Project is to let journalists understand and appreciate reporting economic freedom, so that at the end of the day, it will impact on public policy and also influence public opinion.
Do you get problems from the government? How does the government feel about Africa Youth Peace Call?
They see us as noisy people, and then you have a friend in politics and he doesn't talk to you anymore. But when it comes to physical harm, you have not get there yet. But it looks like some people are trying to shun us and so on and so forth. But the public are receptive of our ideas, especially when you talk about private rules, when you talk about competition in the system. I think we started propagating and advocating for telecommunication liberalization from its early stages. And now the people are actually cashing in on that. They are receiving the benefit of it. And they've realized that if other utilities like electricity and water supply are also liberalized, as we have been advocating, then they are going to benefit from it. Like today, even the poor, a porter out there owns a mobile phone and he can easily communicate with his people up north, about 500 kilometers away, where they have left home to come look for jobs here down south. So basically, the people are understanding. Oh, they are getting it. And I strongly believe that at the end of the day, it is going to sway public policy. Politicians have to understand that they need to kowtow to that. The people who vote against them. So we are not targeting government. We are targeting civil society. We want them to understand what free markets are about, its benefits, so that they will go for it. And then government will understand that if they don't shift their policies and their campaign messages, there's no way they are going to get the votes.
Excellent. Tell me about, I saw a concept on your webpage, on your Facebook, free market environmentalism. I really like that idea. I kind of feel that way without knowing that there was a name for it.
Look, you know something? In this country, if you own a land and there's trees on it, the trees do not belong to you. It belongs to the state. So how does the individual protect the tree? Yes. So what belongs to everyone falls into disrepair. People will just come and cut it and go and enjoy the fruit from it. You don't own the tree, so you can't protect it. Yes. If you own a land, there's a river running through it. The river is not for you, it's for the government. So all our rivers are getting polluted and all our trees are being cut down by people, especially government officials conniving with these chainsaw operators and so on and so forth. So what we are advocating and campaigning for here is that we need greater participation by the private sector in forest management. The alternative way to save our forests, our rivers, and then our wildlife is to give private people greater participation. I always quote this from my mentor, Sovik Chakravarti, an Indian free market scholar. His analogy is this: chicken, goats, pigs, and all the domesticated animals, they are slaughtered in millions every day for human consumption, but they are not getting extincted. Why? Because they have owners. You cannot just take your gun and go there and shoot my sheep or my goat. I'm going to defend myself or I will say this against you. But the official who is supposed to protect these wildlife or these trees could not have criminals out there and they cut the tree and share the profit. But if I'm taking care of that forest, if I don't even barb wire it or create a fence to protect it from poachers or tree cutters, if you come there, I will have my 0.45 ready. Free market environmentalism here is about making sure that individuals own the trees, the animals, the rivers, so that they will protect it.
Excellent. I think that my state, Wyoming, has some things in common with Ghana. We both have buffalo and antelope and a lot of wild land.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wyoming is kind of, in many ways, the wilds of America. It's the old Wild West. It's where the cowboys were. You know, my license plate on my car has a picture of a cowboy on it. And there's still kind of a cowboy spirit here. I mean, the government definitely does administration and hunting licenses and land use, but I like how they do it better here than how they do it in a lot of America. Like in California, it's very hard to hunt. It's not just environmentalists. It's people who don't think anyone should be able to hunt. And here, the politicians are all hunters, so they understand, and they understand animal use, and it's a very much a hunting community. I actually want to try to get you some books by this author named Boston Tea Party, a buddy of mine from Wyoming. He's a libertarian writer. Yes, he's written some great books on libertarianism, and he's also been to Africa on safari, and he's not like other people.
Really?
He's not like other people who've been to Africa. He's very conscientious of the land issues and the environmental issues of Africa. And he wrote a book about it. And I'm trying to get a copy of it for you. It may take a while, but yeah, he wrote a libertarian book on safarying in Africa.
I see. That's good.
So we'll wrap this up. And then in a month or two, we'll do another interview with you. And I want to put this on the Freedom Fiends podcast, but also on the Africa Youth Peace Call website. I'm going to set up a podcast there. So do you want to say any last words before we go?
Yeah, we are calling on libertarian friends out there to support our Air Force here to plant the tree of liberty here in Africa with equipment and any donation of any kind. Even a dollar can make a difference here.
Yep. I will link on both podcasts where to make a tax-deductible donation if anyone wants to help. Thank you, Kofi. It's been very good talking to you today, and I really like African Youth Peace Call, and I'm happy to help.
Thank you so much for your kind support all the time. Thank you so much.
I'm honored. All right. Take care, man.
Bye.
Take care.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.